ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय I am very grateful to be amongst all of you this evening. My special thanks to Yash, Avantika, and their family for opening the doors of their home to over 1,000 people. Thank you very much. One of the most precious and beautiful aspects of Indian culture is the tradition of people coming together to hear subject matters that uplift the consciousness. Bring us closer to our own inner essence and nearer to God. Our Guru Maharaj used to tell us that even in the early part of the 20th century, practically everywhere, the villages, the towns, after people would work, they would gather together, many families, sometimes the whole village, to hear from Ramayana, Mahabharata, Srimad Bhagavata, have kirtan together, take prasad, and then go home. And because they were absorbed in hearing about the Lord and the great Mahants, great souls, they naturally dream about these divine subject matter. That was the tradition of entertainment in India before there was Bollywood and all other alternatives that are today afforded by society. To enrich our character, to find that inner joy that we are all seeking. That is the essential purpose of human life. The Brahma Sutra begins with the aphorism, Atato Brahma Jigyasa. Now that you have earned this great privilege of being a human being, what differentiates you from the lower species? The power to inquire into divine subjects. The lower species, animals, insects, reptiles, birds, fish, they are constantly asking questions, but they are generally categorized in four divisions. Where to get something to eat, where to find a nice place to sleep, how to make nice arrangements for mating, having children. They may not be thinking about the children, but the first part is very much an animal tendency. And to defend whatever we have. Eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. If we examine human civilization, it is by and large very elaborate, sophisticated, technologically developed way of answering the same questions. What differentiates human existence from the lower species is the power to inquire into the higher subjects. Who am I? Why is there suffering? What is this inevitable fate that all persons must encounter called death? Who is God? What is my relationship with God? What is the real inner purpose and meaning of life? According to the Vedanta Sutra, when we sincerely search for these answers, that is when, qualitatively, our human existence begins. Five 5,000 years ago, there was a great king named Parikshit. He was grandson of Arjuna, of the Pandavas. He was the emperor of Bharatvarsha. For a slight mistake that he made so uncharacteristically, he was cursed to die in 7 days. Maharaj Parikshit, because he was such a deeply God-conscious person, he welcomed that curse as an opportunity. He had the power to counteract it. He had the power to get revenge against those who inflicted this upon him. But he looked internally and thought, this is happening by the grace of God. So he went to the river Ganga, to the association of great, great sages, and there asked them, please tell me, what is the essence of all religions? He only had 7 days. He didn't have time to study all the religions of the world, all the Vedas and Upanishads and Puranas. He wanted to know, what is the essence? What is the prime duty of a human being? And what is the most important message to understand for a man who is about to die? He was serious. Sometimes we have to be in a serious situation to become serious. Otherwise, we take things very lightly. Just like when you're driving your car. Are you really serious about remembering God? You may have your radio on, or you may even have some nice spiritual music playing, but you're driving. But if you start skidding and a big truck starts coming toward you, you become very serious about your driving and about remembering God. Unfortunately, it is the nature of human psychology. It takes a serious situation to make us serious. All the great sages unanimously selected Shukadev Goswami to speak. He was only 16 years old. Teenager. And there were people there like Vyasadeva, Narada Muni, Vishwamitra Muni, Vasishtha Muni, Gautama Muni, Atri Muni. We don't even know how old they were. They were there at the time of Ram in the Treta Yuga. They were there in Satya Yuga. And they asked a 16-year-old boy to speak. You see, life is about quality. It's not about quantity. Shukadev Goswami tells in Srimad Bhagavatam that better to live one moment in very deep, full, pure consciousness than a long, long life without that. Recently, I was in the Sequoia National Forest in Northern California. And we saw some really old trees. Some were 3,000 years old. Have you ever been to Sequoia National Forest? We saw the General Sherman Tree, the largest tree on the planet Earth as far as volume. General Grant Tree is the third largest. And it says if you hollowed it out, you can put 170,000 basketballs in it. If you don't like basketball, you could put several million ping pong balls in it. That's table tennis. And if you don't like that, if you like to drive around in your car, if you hollow it out, you could fill it with petrol. And if you could somehow connect that to your car, you could drive around the planet Earth 2.5 times. It's a very big tree. And the General Sherman Tree, it says, this is all, I don't know who makes these analyses, but they do. It's all written. That if an ant looks up at a 6-foot man, he'll have the same experience as a 6-foot man looking up at the General Sherman Tree. Long tree. I went there with 2 busloads of teenagers. It was quite exciting, actually. And I asked them, if this tree was to give us a message after standing here for 3,000 years, what message would he give to human society? And one of the teenage boys said, he would tell us that you should get very serious about your spiritual life or you may end up like me. And one girl, she said, I think that tree would tell us, please, all of you, come here and chant Hare Krishna and let me give up this body and go back to God. So human life is very precious because each moment is so precious. Chanakya Pandit said, the most precious thing in all of existence is each moment. Because if you lose a moment, you cannot gain it back for any cost. Shukadev Goswami, he spoke the most essential stories throughout history. For King Parikshit and for the whole world to benefit from. That is Srimad Bhagavatam. In the stories of great personalities, we learn so much of what real purpose of life and what real qualities we should strive for. So tonight I would like to very briefly speak on one such story and the beautiful lessons that are meant for everyone of how to really enrich our lives. It is a story we all know, the story of Dhruva Maharaj. We know Dhruva was just a child of 5 years, son of a king, Uttanapada. He loved his father dearly. He trusted his father with his whole heart. A 5-year-old child, how utterly dependent he is on his parents. I just read a sign on the road in Bombay. It was very nice. It said that children are like wet cement. Anything that falls on it makes a lasting imprint. Children are so impressionable. They're like little sponges. They just absorb everything, and it goes deep into their consciousness and affects their psychology, their way of life, for the rest of their lives. Adults, because we have developed so much discrimination and so many experiences, we go through a whole screening process, whatever comes in. But children, they just absorb everything. So little Dhruva climbs up to affectionately be with his father and his stepmother. Suruchi screams at him, "You have no right to sit on the throne with your father because you are born of an inferior woman. If you want this position, you must take another birth from my womb." Now that's a great trauma. And little Dhruva turned to his father for shelter. He had no other shelter. But because his father was so much attached and obliged to this co-wife, he said nothing. When this little boy needed him the most, he was not there for him. Dhruva ran to his own mother, Suniti, lips trembling, tears pouring from his eyes, body shaking. And she expressed to him how helpless she was. "What this woman told you is true. Your father loves her more than me." He was in such pain. But sometimes traumas in life are stepping stones to the greatest success. That is real intelligence. How to transform every situation into one in which we grow. And that opportunity is there for everyone in every instance in life, if we simply make the right choice. Dhruva's mother said, "The only thing I can say to you," he said, "I want a kingdom better than my father, better than my grandfather." It's something a 5-year-old child would say. But he was serious. She said, "By the grace of God, it is possible." "Where is God?" "Well, great souls go to the forest to find God." He immediately left. She wasn't expecting that. He left for the forest. It is said, by the mercy of Krishna, one gets Guru, and by the mercy of Guru, one gets Krishna. The Lord is within our heart. Ishvara sarva bhutanam hridesher junatishtati brahmayan sarva bhutanam yantra mudani mayaya. That the Lord seated within the heart of every living being, according to our desire, directs us. This body is like a machine. It is like a vehicle. So in the forest, the Lord sent Narada Muni. He just happened to be in that forest. And he first tested Dhruva. You're just a boy. It's not so serious. Go home. Little Dhruva said, whatever you're saying is correct, but it doesn't stay in my heart. I must have this kingdom. So Narada Muni told him, chant the names of the Lord, worship the form of the Lord, and perform some tapasya to help you absorb yourself in remembrance of the Lord. The little child did it so seriously in the holy land of Vrindavan, Madhuban, and bank of Yamuna. And within just a matter of a couple months, he saw the Lord within his heart, opened his eyes and saw that same form standing before him. The Lord said, oh, so you want the kingdom greater than your father? I can give. Dhruva Maharaj said, I came looking for broken glass, and I have achieved the highest, most precious diamond. What could I want after your darshan? The Lord told him, you should go home, you should get married, you should take the responsibilities of the kingdom. That is your service to me. So Dhruva Maharaj became a great king. Now, very interesting, many years later, his younger brother Uttama, the reason why Suruchi would not allow Dhruva on the lap of her husband was she wanted her son there, Uttama. Uttama was killed in the forest by a yaksha. Now, it is the duty of a king to provide justice. So he was not only seriously lamenting the death of his brother, but he was angry. Now, people may ask, he saw God. He was self-realized. How did he fall victim to anger? Is that a defect in him? Anger is it's part of human nature. We find even the Lord, you all know the story of Narasimhadev, when he saw little Prahlad being persecuted and tortured by his father, Narasimhadev was angry. But his anger is perfect. Krishna tells in Gita, Kama esha krodha esha rajoguna shamudbhava. That when our passionate, selfish desires are frustrated, that creates anger. Jayato vishayan pungsang. Sangasteshu bhajayate. There's a whole system of how the human being falls into sinful activity. First, we contemplate the objects of the senses. From that contemplation, attachment in our mind. When we ponder that attachment, kama or lust develops. When lust is frustrated, anger. And what happens when we're angry? We lose our memory is lost. When memory is lost, intelligence is lost. When we lose our intelligence, we say things, we do things that we know we should not do. And then we fall into the pool of impious karma. But anger that is utilized for a positive purpose is divine. Sometimes a parent must at least pretend to be angry to get the child to take the message seriously for the child's sake. So Dhruva Maharaj, as king, it was his duty to become angry upon such people. So he went into the Himalayas and he attacked the Yakshas. Actually, all he did is just blow his conch shell just to show, I'm here. And just by hearing his conch shell, the whole army of about 120,000 Yakshas attacked him. And he was alone. He was fighting. And he was defeating all of them. He had such power. He had God behind him. But when they saw that they were being defeated, the Yakshas, who were all mystic yogis, who had siddhis, they created a mass illusion. Because if they could bewilder him, they could defeat him. That's the way material energy works. It's really an analogy of life. They created such an illusion where Dhruva Maharaj saw heavy, heavy winds. An entire tsunami or tidal wave was coming toward him. There was massive rain clouds. And blood and pus and all kinds of excrements were falling. And then from the rain clouds were hissing venomous snakes and lions and tigers and elephants. And they were all looking at Dhruva Maharaj right in the eyes, screaming. And poor Dhruva, he became bewildered. Even such a great devotee sometimes becomes bewildered. But then what happened is the great sages, they gathered around and they encouraged Dhruva Maharaj. They said, Dhruva, this is all just an illusion created. But the Supreme Lord is none different than his name. Chant the name of the Lord and he will give you shelter from all of these illusions. Krishna Suryasa Mayohaya Andhakar. Illusion is like darkness. And Krishna, or God, is light. What is darkness? It is simply the absence of light. Where there is light, darkness is automatically dispelled. Dhruva chanted the holy names of the Lord, remembered the Lord, and the entire illusion was dispelled. For one on the spiritual path who is fighting against illusion, we should understand it is beyond us. Mayadhyakshena prakriti suyate sacharacharam. This illusory energy or maya is Krishna's energy, his external energy. Daivihyeshu gunamayi mama maya duratyaya. Krishna tells in Bhagavad Gita that this illusory energy, which is conducted by the three gunas, very, very difficult to overcome. Very powerful. But one who takes shelter of me can easily cross beyond it. The example is given that material energy, this illusory energy that keeps us bound to things that are not reality, it is like a vast ocean without a bottom and without shores. How to cross it? But one who takes shelter of the Lord, it becomes as easy to cross as jumping over the quantity of water contained within the small hoof print of a calf. So by chanting the name of the Lord and remembering the Lord, the entire illusion was dispelled. And Dhruva Maharaj, he began his fighting. He just took one arrow. It was an arrow given to him by a great rishi, Narayan Rishi. And that from that one arrow, so many arrows came out. Unlimited arrows. It is said in Srimad Bhagavatam that in this age of Kali, Krishna Varnam Tvasa Krishnam Sangopangasya Parashanam Yajyai Sankirtana Prayaya Yajantihi Sumedasha. The greatest weapon is the name of God. And it was like that arrow of Dhruva. Just by taking shelter of the Lord in His name, it is the panacea for all our internal diseases of the heart. He was really destroying everything. At that point, Swayambhuva Manu came down, his grandfather, and said, "Dear Dhruva Maharaj, enough is enough. It was only one yaksha that killed your brother. Why are you exterminating their whole race? The rest of them are innocent." "Dhruva, you're a great devotee of the Lord. And devotees of the Lord must be exemplary in every way. You have fallen victim to unnecessary anger." And Swayambhuva Manu said, "Anger is one of the greatest enemies to anyone on the spiritual path." Why is that? Because when we become angry, we cause pain to other living beings. Swayambhuva Manu said, "A devotee, his interest or her interest is to please God. And how does that devotee please God? By having relationships with others, by treating and greeting others with tolerance, friendliness, mercy, and equality." Even if others come against us, we should be tolerant. An example of tolerance, I will take you back to the Sequoia National Forest near in Northern California. I saw this General Grant tree. It had gaping black wounds in it from forest fires. To stand there for 3,000 years, it withstood hundreds of forest fires. But then I did a little research about those forest fires. And I found without forest fires, they can't exist. Can I tell you some of the reasons? Little analysis, scientifically discovered. First of all, the seeds in the sequoia tree are within cones. And these cones are very hard, like wood. And it's very difficult for the seeds to get out of that wood. But when there's a forest fire, the heat creates pressure and causes the seeds to come out and go into the ground. Now, how does it get into the ground? generally there's so many shrubs and so many everything on the ground. The forest fire burns away everything. And also all the ashes and all the smaller shrubs and bushes and trees that burn, it actually fertilizes the ground. So when the seed comes out by the grace of the forest fire, it falls into the ground, which is cleared by the forest fire, and it nourished by the forest fire. But then it needs sunlight, a lot of sunlight. And all the trees, except the gigantic sequoia trees, they're all burned away to give the opportunity for the sun to reach that little seed that's growing. So they depend on forest fires. And you know how they discovered this? The forest rangers developed a system in one big forest where they put out every fire. And for 50 years, not a single new tree grew. Then they realized they need fires. This is so symbolic that the fires of life, if we learn to grow and to tolerate, they help us to become better human beings, to come closer to God, and to have higher realizations. Now, nobody likes the fires when they come, but if you liked it, you wouldn't grow in it. Just like children have exams. How many really are excited and look forward to studying for their exams? Most children really don't, but they have to. But that pressure helps them grow. If they take it seriously. If they don't, it helps them fail. That's the way life is. Svayambhuva Manu is telling Dhruva that it was only one yaksha that killed your brother. Be kind to them. Great devotees are tolerant. They are merciful. They are friendly to others. And they see everyone with equal vision. Vidyavanaya sampane brahmani gavihastini suni chaiva svapakecha pandita samadarshana. When we perceive God in our own heart, we perceive our own identity in relation with God, and we see every living being as part of God. And therefore, we love and we respect every living entity with equal vision. We may have to deal with them differently. You may embrace your God brother or God sister, but you will not embrace a tiger or a serpent. But you can see the essence within them and respect them. That is a symptom of one who knows themselves. And when you have these qualities, God is pleased. And when Krishna is pleased, he helps you to overcome the grand illusion of I and mine. That I am this body and everything in relation to this body is mine. We understand that I am the eternal soul. I'm a part of God. I'm the eternal servant of God. And what is mine? Everything is God's property. Bhoktaram jagatapasam. What is mine is the opportunity to use God's property according to God's will. Krishna tells us when we live by these simple principles, we find eternal peace and bliss. So therefore, stop this fighting and fix your mind and take shelter of the Supreme Lord. So Dhruva Maharaj stopped the fighting. Kuvera And here I'm going to begin today's class. Kuvera is a relative of the Yakshas. He was so happy that Dhruva stopped the fighting. He came down. Now, Kuvera is the treasurer of the Devatas. He's a very big person. He has all the wealth of the heavens at his disposal. He was so pleased with Dhruva for being so kind, so tolerant, and so forgiving to his relatives. He said, I want to give you any benediction. Ask for anything, and I have it. Now, we have some bankers here. I see in the from London, Shailesh Govindya, Nikunja Bihari. How would you like Kuvera to offer you this benediction? He's the head of the biggest bank in the universe. Yes. Indra, Vayu, Agni, they have to get withdrawals from Kuvera. They have to get loans and everything. He's the ultimate banker of the universe. And he's saying, anything you want, I will give it. Dhruva Maharaj, he said, if you must give me something, there's only two benedictions I desire. Please grant me unflinching faith and remembrance in the Supreme Lord of the universe, Krishna. Unflinching faith and remembrance in the Lord. Now, in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains that people who are of less intelligence, they worship demigods for material benedictions. So one may ask, why Dhruva Maharaj asked a benediction from a demigod? Because Dhruva Maharaj was so kind-hearted and he was so respectful that because Kuvera offered him a benediction, out of respect for Kuvera, he had to ask for something. So he asked for the only thing that was really meaningful in his life. It is said that all the religious scriptures of all the religions in all of the universe, there's so many laws, there's so many philosophies, there's so many explanations, there's so many histories, there's so many stories. Everything is meant to fulfill two principles. The essence of everything. To always remember Krishna and to never forget Krishna. That's all Dhruva Maharaj asked for. And in asking for that, he wanted to show the world that that is the greatest treasure. There is nothing more valuable than the awakening of the God consciousness within our hearts. The supreme treasure is within us. In the Bible, Lord Jesus said, what is the use if you gain the whole world, but you lose your own soul? What is our life? Death must come. The power of time marches on. With every movement of the second hand of the clock, our fate is coming closer. And what can we take with us? Our fame, our wealth, our properties, our degrees, MAs, PhDs, all the people around us. They're tragically torn away from us at death. Therefore, Krishna says, Dukalayam Ashashvatam. It's very painful. But our soul is eternal. Our relationship with God is eternal. Our relationship with each other on the spiritual platform is eternal. And we will find that so beautifully illustrated later on in the story. So I will carry on with your permission. Dhruva Maharaj the benediction he asked for reveals to the world what the greatest treasure in life is. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in his Shikshastakam he offers prayer. Na dhanam na janam na sundarim kavitam va jagadisha kamaye mama janamani janmanishwari bhavatad bhakti rohaita kitvai. My Lord, I am not asking you for wealth. We may work for wealth, and God may provide, but that's not really why we approach Him. I do not want beautiful woman or man. I do not want fame, prestige, followers. These things may come and go in this world. We may work for them, but when we approach God, Lord Chaitanya's heart, I don't want these things. I don't even want liberation from suffering. Let me just be your servant unconditionally, birth after birth after birth. That was Dhruva Maharaj's mood. That is the essence of Srimad Bhagavatam. Kuvera said, yes, I grant you this benediction. And he disappeared. Now, Dhruva Maharaj went on to rule the world. And we'll tell you very briefly how he did so. Such an example. Although he was a great king, he lived for the welfare of others. Practically every day, he would empty his treasury in order to give charity to others. It is explained that he lived by three principles: yajna, dana, and tapasya. And Srimad Bhagavatam states, and the acharyas in their explanations or commentaries, that these three principles everyone on spiritual path should observe very carefully. What is yajna? Yajna means our spiritual practices to please the Lord. Harivo. Usually we think yajna means the fire sacrifice, agnihotra. But what is the purpose of the agnihotra? It's to please the Lord. Hearing the glories of the Lord is yajna. Purifies our heart. Rendering service to the Lord, praying to the Lord is yajna. But yajna sankirtana praya janti hi sumedasha. In this age of Kali, the most powerful of all yajnas is the congregational chanting of the holy names of the Lord. To regularly purify our hearts through spiritual practice is a prime duty for every human being. And then dana, which is charity. God's grace comes through compassion. It is said in Srimad Bhagavatam that there is no service that is more pleasing to the Lord than showing compassion to others. our Guru Maharaj, even when he was in New York City, Srila Prabhupada, in the Bowery, I think we all know the story. He left India when he was 69 years old. He arrived in New York City, 70. He had just had two heart attacks on a boat. He was on a cargo ship for 38 days. While crossing the Arabian Sea, he had these repeated heart attacks. There was no medical people. There was nothing except the ocean all around him. When he arrived, he only had about $6, $7, but it was in rupees, so he couldn't change it. 40 rupees, to be exact. He was living in very, very simple circumstances. And somehow or other, with some help, he got a little storefront after about 8 months of struggling alone. Only to give the essence of Indians' culture to others, which is universal. One time a reporter challenged Srila Prabhupada, "We have our own religion. Why have you come to our country?" He said, "I have not come to convert. I have come to enlighten. Because the Vedas teach Sanatan Dharma. Sanatan Dharma is the essence of every religion. It's universal principle. There are many isms. There is Christianity, and there is Islam, and there is Judaism, and Hinduism, and Buddhism, and Jainism, and Parsi, and atheism, and agnosticism, and so many things. But the essence of all true religion is to love God. Savai pungshang paro dharmo yato bhaktiradhokshite ahoitiki apratihata yagatma suprasidati. The supreme perfection, the supreme occupation for all humanity is unmotivated, unconditional love for God. That is Srimad Bhagavatam. Moses in the Old Testament, Jesus in the New Testament, they both echoed. Same principle. The first and great commandment is to love God with all your heart, all your mind, and your soul. And what happens when you love God? Naturally, spontaneously, you love your neighbor as yourself. Because you see yourself in everyone. You see your beloved in everyone. That is Sanatan Dharma. Srila Prabhupada said, "I have not come to convert, I have come to enlighten." And then he said, "I have come to teach you what you have forgotten. That you are the eternal soul beyond death. And the nature of the soul is to love God." When Prabhupada was asked the same question in London, "Why have you come?" Srila Prabhupada's response was that you British, you ruled over India for about 2 centuries. And you plundered all the jewels and so much of the wealth of India. But you forgot the most precious of all jewels, Krishna. So I've come to bring to London the one thing that you forgot to take. And he gave. So when Srila Prabhupada was living he had nothing, little storefront, he had no money, no followers, but he would do kirtan. And after kirtan, he felt one must give in charity. So he would get somehow or other one apple. And however many people were there, he would count and he would cut the apple into that many pieces. If there was 10 people, he would cut it into 10 pieces. If there was 30 people, he would very carefully cut that one apple in. That's all he had, into 30 pieces. And he would offer it to Krishna and give everyone a piece of apple. And when those, because Prabhupada saw Krishna in that prasad. What is prasad? Prasada means the mercy of the Lord. It is not just food. Patram pushpam palam toyam yome bhakta prayachchati. Krishna tells in Gita, when you offer me something with love and devotion, I accept it. And what happens when the Lord accepts it? He infuses His love, His mercy into that food. And we are communing. We are uniting. Yoga means to unite, to reconnect. We are reconnecting with God just by eating that food. Our body, our minds, our hearts, our souls are being infused by God's grace when we eat prasadam. It's a very holy thing. And actually, I can tell you, so many of the people who became Vaishnavas, serious devotees in the Western world, it all began because of prasad. I can tell so many stories. The power of prasad cannot be calculated with our intelligence. People who were addicted to illicit sex, intoxication, gambling, meeting, who had no faith in God, who were wasting their whole lives, they just get one of those little pieces of apple by Prabhupada and they come back for more and more. And after he got a little more wealth, he started making gulab jamuns. And their hearts changed. And they surrendered their lives to the highest moral principles with faith in God. Yes, when Prabhupada gave that little sliver of an apple, people would, just by Prabhupada's faith in that little apple, people who knew nothing about any of this culture could just feel it. And they came forward. And when he put it in their hand, they just looked at it like, oh, an apple. They didn't know what it was, but it was an apple. They didn't know what is prasad. And they'd eat it. And they would be completely satisfied. So don or charity is very, very essential for one who wants to progress. And tapasya. Tapasya means to refrain from doing those things that further cover our heart with ignorance. It is said that an elephant takes a nice bath, comes out and rolls in the dirt, and he's dirty again. So if we do yajna, and if we perform charity, dana, but we don't perform tapasya, we're not regulating our lives according to moral principles, then we so much undo what we have done. So for grihasthas, for brahmacharis, there's different forms of yajna, dana, and tapasya, but the principle is necessary. Dhruva Maharaj lived and ruled the world in this spirit. He lived in the Satya Yuga. 36,000 years he ruled the world. And when he had a son that was competent to take his service, he was not the type of politician that just wants to keep his power till death. He was eager to give it up. He was just doing it as a service. What he really wanted to do is go to Badrik Ashram in Himalayas. Just like Yash, Avanti, they do their business, but every chance they go to Rishikesh in Himalayas. They tell me how they hate coming back to Bombay. But they perform their duties. Well, Rishikesh is next to Haridwar. Haridwar means the door to Hari, which is Badrinath. and Hara, which is Kedarnath. So he went to Badrikashram, took his bath three times in the cold waters of Alaknanda, and he was chanting God's names, just as his Guru Maharaj, Narada Muni, instructed him when he was a five-year-old child. He was still following those principles, worshipping the Archavigraha, the deity of the Lord, meditating on the form of the Lord in his heart of hearts, chanting the holy names of the Lord, serving all the great sages that were assembled. And constantly his hairs were standing on end in ecstasy of love. Tears were streaming from his eyes. He attained perfection. And please listen carefully. At that time, the Supreme Lord sent an airplane from the spiritual world to bring him back home to his eternal home. Dhruva Maharaj saw this magnificent airplane, which was as big as a house, that descended. It wasn't like the airplanes that we ride in. It was beautiful. And there were two divine persons who looked just like the Lord of Vaikuntha. Their names were Nanda and Sunanda. They welcomed Dhruva. They said, Dhruva, the Supreme Lord Narayan has personally sent us to take you on this airplane back to Vaikuntha, your eternal home. Listen carefully, please. Dhruva Maharaj was so struck with reverence and confused to see these magnificent divine personalities on this airship. He forgot what he was supposed to do to welcome them. So he just bowed down, folded his hands, and chanted the name of the Lord. And the Bhagavatam explains that if you don't know anything else, that's sufficient. If you are a great pundit and you know all the mantras and all the yajnas and all the mantras, yantras, tantras, pujas, mudras, and everything else, that's very nice. But if you just chant the name of the Lord sincerely, that is sufficient. And then he went and took his bath and performed all his spiritual morning duties, his meditation, his japa, all of those things. Why? The purpose of doing that is to get that airplane ride. The airplane ride was there. Why did he do it? Because he was not chanting and performing his religious activities just to achieve something. He was doing it as an expression of his love for God. And he wanted to show the world how important it is to show our love for God through our spiritual practice. And then he went and offered his dandavat, pranams, to all of the assembled great sages. He worshipped all the rishis and asked for their blessings for him to go back to Vishnu. Now this is really amazing. He was so humble, so respectful, so grateful. There was not a trace of pride in Dhruva's heart. The airplane was coming for him. Now for most of us, we would be thinking, look at me. The airplane has come for me. It hasn't come for you. None of those sages were fit to get on that airplane. Wouldn't you at least be thinking that way? Of everybody here, this airplane, there's only one ticket for me. And it was sent by Vishnu himself. you would be offering blessings to everyone else. But no, Dhruva Maharaj felt, it is only by the grace of all of you that Vishnu has accepted me. He had no pride. He honored them, respected them. Lord Chaitanya teaches us, Trinadapi suniche na taror ibase hishnana amanina manadena kirtaniya sadahari. We should be humble like the grass, tolerant like the tree. We should be very eager to offer all respect to others, and we should not be craving respect for ourselves. In this spirit, we could taste the sweet nectar of God's name and chant constantly. Yes, Dhruva Maharaj honored and worshipped all of those great sages as their servant and asked for their blessings to go back to the Lord. Now, when he was about to board that ship, death personified stood before him. How would you like to meet death personified face to face? Dhruva Maharaj, he put his foot on the head of death personified and used it as the step to board the Vaikuntha airplane, Vimana. To show the world that a great personality who takes shelter of the Lord is beyond death. When we take shelter of the Lord, we conquer death. Now, rationalistic people will challenge this, that every saint dies too. You go to see the samadhi of your guru and the samadhi of all these great acharyas. What does that mean? They died. The businessman dies. The atheist dies. The saint dies. Death is for everyone. What is the difference? Srila Prabhupada gives example that the cat holds the kitten in her mouth. And the cat holds the rat in the same mouth. Is there a difference? No. And yes. There's no difference. It's the same cat and the same mouth. But the difference is in the mind of the kitten and the rat. Because the kitten has taken shelter of the rat. I mean, not the rat, I'm sorry. Somehow the Lord always reveals my own consciousness. Because the kitten has taken shelter of the mother cat, she sees the mother as the most pleasurable well-wisher who's the embodiment of love and protection and nourishment. But because the rat has not learned to take shelter of the cat, sees the cat as death personified. Krishna tells in Bhagavad Gita, I am death personified. I am time. Death is simply an instrument of time. Time is the power of the Lord within this universal creation. When we take shelter of the Lord, vasamsi janani yata vihaya, death is just a change. It's not the end of the soul. It's just a change. It's the doors to the spiritual world opening before us. But if we don't take shelter, then the power of time, when it manifests as death, it's the most horrible, unknown mystery. When we give up this propensity of I and mine, I'd like to tell one small story. there was a dog. And this dog was really determined to get a bone. Now for a dog, a bone is a great treasure. Just see how relative life is. For all of you, a bone is abominable. Yes, if you see just a old bone on the street, if you touch it, you take a bath. But for a dog, very, very precious. So that dog got that bone after great efforts. And he was walking with his bone, really proud, enjoying. And he happened to walk by a small river. And he looked in the river and looked down. And there was, in the river, a dog with a bone in his mouth. Who was that dog? It was a reflection of himself. But the dog was thinking, that dog has a bone. I want his bone. I have a bone, but I want his bone too. So what did he do? He reached with his mouth and tried to get that other dog's bone. But in the process, his own bone fell in the river. And there wasn't another bone. He lost his own bone, trying to get somebody else's bone. What is the moral to the story? When we are not content with what God gives us, and we're always trying to get something else, ultimately, we could lose everything. We may be trying to get more and more and more. That's all right. But we cannot be happy unless we're content with the simple things we have. Our reaching out for more and more should be not for contentment. Because if you're not content with who you are and what you are, you cannot be content with anything. Little Vamanadeva, the dwarf, asked Bali Maharaj, give me 3 steps of land. Bali Maharaj said, I can give you planets. I can give you mansions. I can give you anything. I'm a great king. Why you only want 3 steps? Vamanadeva said, if one is not content within oneself, one can never be content with anything. If you're content within yourself, whether you have little or whether you have lot, you can use it all for great things, for great purposes. It is a great lesson in life. So Dhruva Maharaj was content with the Lord within his heart, and he conquered death, got on the airplane. And just as Nanda and Sunanda were about to bring the ship to the spiritual world, Dhruva Maharaj had a thought in his mind. How could I go back to the spiritual world to enjoy blissful life with the Supreme Lord forever and not bring my poor mother? Just as he was thinking of that, the Lord within the heart reciprocated. Nanda and Sunanda pointed upward and said, look there. And he saw his mother on a ship going back home to the spiritual world. Now I will end our little talk with this very, very divine message. In order for the seed of love to grow in the heart, it must be fertilized and softened by gratitude. In an ungrateful heart, the seed of self-realization cannot really prosper. Dhruva Maharaj was remembering back to one favor that his mother gave him. She was his Pata Pradarshaka Guru, which means she showed him initially the path to self-realization. She told little Dhruva that if you want to know God, you should go to the forest. That's all. And because of her just saying that one line, and she said it about 36,000 years before, but he remembered and he was grateful. This is the consciousness of a virtuous person. Anyone who has ever helped us, we do not forget. We're always grateful. I once met a sage in the Himalayas, and he told me, anything good another person does for you, you should never forget it. Anything good that you have done for others, it's best if you forget it. Because then we think, we become proud. But we should always be grateful. Yes, Dhruva Maharaj remembered how long ago his mother helped him. His mother loved him. And by his thought, by his prayer alone, his mother was qualified to spiritual perfection. And in this case, our beloved Guru Maharaj Srila Prabhupada writes that she was like his guru. That's the way he considered. And Prabhupada said in his own humility that he's hoping that out of his tens and thousands of disciples, he said, if one of my disciples could just become like Dhruva Maharaj, then by his prayer, Prabhupada said, even I may be able to go back to the spiritual world. Prahlad Maharaj, by his love for the Lord, even Hiranyakashipu went back to the spiritual world. And the Lord explained, if one awakens love of God within this world, 10 generations of all family members in the past and the present, they all get liberated, whoever they are, simply because the Lord is so indebted to those who love him. He wants to give his kindness to all those people who that person loves, directly and indirectly. Dhruva Maharaj taught that sense of gratitude. At these different characteristics that we have heard of in tonight's narration are the virtues that every sincere spiritual aspirant, whether they are husbands or wives or mothers or fathers, or whether they're sadhus, whether they're farmers or business people or politicians or lawyers, architects, whether they're men or women, old or young, these are universal virtues that should be understood and cultivated. And by doing so, the greatest of all treasures will be revealed, not only from within our hearts, but in every aspect of our life. Thank you very much. Shall we have Nam Sankirtan for a few minutes? By dancing in Kirtan, you will be able to appreciate the prasad with more enthusiasm. So please let us chant and dance to purify our hearts. It is said in Sri Chaitanya Bhagavat, that this yajna of Nam Sankirtan, when devotees dance with their feet, they purify the earth. And when they raise their arms high, the Lord, the energy of the Lord in His name purifies the universe. So as I am chanting with folded hands, please welcome the holy name into your ears and your heart. And as you are chanting with raised arms, let us take shelter of the Lord. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasadi Gaur Bhaktivinoda.